Hey, Chris Manning from Locked On Cavs here. Coming up on today's show, Evan Damrell and I talk about the Cavs' loss to the Pistons, talk a bit more about Kevin Love, and again, with the road trip coming up, with just kind of an interesting part of the schedule coming up, drop your questions in lockedoncavs@gmail.com or Evan's DMs or the Google Voice number in our Twitter bio. You can send any of your questions there for upcoming mailbag episodes of Locked On Cavs for Evan and I to answer, but let's get into today's show. This is Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Okay, Evan, let's hop right into this. Cavs lose 115 to 113 against the Detroit Pistons. A game I think they are going to be kicking themselves that they didn't win. They win the first half by, looking at just doing quick math, 13 points, and then win the third, lose the third quarter by two, so have an 11-point lead heading into the fourth. End up losing this one 31-18. Some of the big contributors in this one, Kevin Love, 30 points, 9 boards, 4 assists, 12 of 15 from the field for Love, 4 of 6 from 3. Osmond, 17, 7 of 16 from the field, was particularly good in the first half. Sexton with 20 points, 7 of 19 from the field. Darius Garland is 14, but only on 4 of 12 shooting. Did also have 3 assists. And then Brandon Knight adds 13 points off the bench. Saw guys like Dean Wade, Ante Zizic tonight, a shorthanded Cavs team because of no Dante Exum. Some other guys like Kevin Porter Jr. out. What to you stood out for from this game?
That ending sequence where Darius Garland just kind of played a little bit of hero ball and kicked out of Sexton when he stepped out of bounds. I think that's just youth and inexperience rearing its ugliest head possible in the worst possible moment for the Cavs. It's just, before we started recording, I said this was a bummer. Now the more I think about it, like, it was just a frustrating loss because, like you said, the Cavs were winning that first half and they looked great and then lost the second or the third quarter by 2 points and then just got annihilated down the stretch in the fourth. But I mean, it's a bummer because Kevin Love was locked in and engaged from opening tip, it felt like, and it sucks to squander such a good game like this. And like you said, they're going to be kicking themselves for it, and hopefully they come back locked in and ready to go when they're in Detroit in 2 days. Yeah, 2 days.
This game was much more entertaining than I expected it to be.
I do think it was a fun game, albeit a frustrating one.
Yeah, I think the way it ends, I think we should definitely talk about the last couple minutes of offense there. And I think there's a couple things about the Cavs that I think I was reminded of as a result of this game. But let's talk about Kevin. For him, this ties a season high. He had 30 points in two other games, the 8-point win against the Spurs and earlier in December. And then right after Christmas, he had 30 in Boston, also had 29 in a loss to the Mavericks. But this was as good one of his better games of the year. I think the best he's looked in a couple weeks. Well, we're going to talk about what he said on Tuesday at Shoot Around later in the show. We're going to spend one of our last segment on that particular instance for one Kevin Love. But, you know, I think the thing with him in this one is that I felt like they did a lot of stuff that felt just – I have to go back and watch and kind of diagram this and look at how he got his shots. But to me, on first watch, on a live watch – it felt as if they were doing a better job of just getting him looks in where areas he was comfortable. Some more deliberate post-ups where it was him, a shooter / ball handler close by, and then other guys across the floor. And then some other stuff where he was getting catch-and-shoot threes, and they were kind of looking for him. I don't know if that was like, maybe Beeline will talk about this after the game, and, you know, we're not there. But I wonder if that was like a tactical change. And that, to me, if like, you're going to say like, there was an overwhelming positive, that to me was it.
No, it felt like maybe they're force feeding him a little bit, just, you know, maybe make a point. But overall, his body language is a lot better, at least compared to the Oklahoma City game. I did notice a sequence towards the end of the second half where Sexton came barreling down the lane on a fast break opportunity, and then he pulled it back out to be on the arc. And then Kevin had his hands up for a second, and then, you know what, he just waved to Colin and just kind of like said, go for it. And then I can't remember if Sexton ended up scoring or not, but it just feels like he's kind of – things are a little bit back to normal. Like you said, we'll touch on what he said at Shoot Around on Tuesday. But it's just – no, I liked a lot of the looks the Cavs were giving him, like on the perimeter and everything else. And just like him engaged on the offense is a great thing because some of those backdoor cuts the Cavs were exploiting in the first half, there's that one sequence where I think where Kevin kicked it to Jetty, and it was just a really nice, well drawn up play, and like that was seems like it's a staple of the Bayline offense, and just to have that sequence going forward is just nice to see. But like I said, and you said, he tied a season high, and it's just a bit of a kick in the nads a little bit just to see the Cavs blow it at the end. So, but hey, it is what it is.
Yeah, I know it is what it is. What did you make of Sexton's game overall?
I'm looking at the box score breakdown now. It just feels weird, I guess. I mean, I think we're going to keep preaching this until the Cavs come home or until he finally gets relegated to the bench. I can stop worrying about it so much. But 20 points and 7 to 19 shooting. He hit a three-pointer. He was 5-6 from the line, but had 2 assists, 2 rebounds, 1 steal. I guess that's a pretty good stat line for Colin Sexton. He's a bucket getter, and he looks sharp at times. And then there's, I mean, like you said, you know what? I think at this point you could just firmly establish that there's going to be a frustrating sequence or three with Colin Sexton in some of these games. But I think he was fine. I do think it's unfortunate, and I'm sure he's going to be kicking himself for stepping out of bounds in that end game sequence in the fourth quarter. But I mean, those are just growing pains of the young player, and I think it's something positive to build off of. And it's just, I don't know. It wasn't too bad. And I'm looking at his plus minus now, and he finished second worst with minus 17. But again, you got to take the good with the bad of Sexton, and he had a good scoring night, albeit everything else just wasn't amazing. So
yeah, I feel as if the end of the game is going to color my perception of his game a little, because I thought there was some definite good stuff from him. I felt as if the end, I don't know, you know, could have been the time constraints. It could have been, you know, the botch call. I would love to know in the alternate world what look he ends up with or what the play result is if they don't make that incorrect call where his foot's out of bounds. You know, he had like a pretty clear lane there to get something up, but that's a shot I feel comfortable that he's going to make, or at least, you know, Tristan's right there to get a rebound. Kevin's in there battling against Andre Maker. Like, that's not like the worst case scenario you could have come up with.
No.
But I thought it was also interesting in a night where Kevin Love was so much the focal point, that Sexton was the one at the end of the game kind of getting the chance to do that. And that's really one of the first time, if not the, you know, if it's not one of the first times, it is the first time where he was kind of trusted in that late scenario. And that's just kind of an interesting little wrinkle within the context of everything that's going on.
No, I'd agree with that. And I guess that's a good thing going forward as well. Just to maybe, I don't know, maybe it's just how the sequence broke down itself, or maybe the coaching staff kind of drew things up saying that. Because I know Garland kicked the ball to him, and they said, Darius, if the shot isn't there, just pass it to Colin and see what he can do with it. And like you said, the attempt was fine, but like I felt comfortable in that situation. Like, you know what, that's fine. But it's, I guess, maybe a confidence builder, even though it didn't work out the way the Cavs wanted. But I guess that's saying something, that the Cavs do feel comfortable with letting him take a possible game-winning shot down the stretch, so...
I think that's fair. Okay. Any we're gonna take a break here real quick, and I'm gonna be back with more Locked On Cavs, so stay tuned. All right, Evan, we're back. What else to you on the peripherals of this game? What stood out to you? I think for me, Brandon Knight obviously is something. But anything else stand out to you?
Actually, I was gonna hope we could talk about Brandon Knight a little bit. I put it in my notes saying Cleveland's misfit toys had a pretty good evening. I'll just jump. Let's work backwards. Baby Shaq got some burn. Don't agree with the fact the Cavs Twitter page called him Z2.0. I feel like it's a little sacrilegious.
Yeah. Okay, so the other thing that the broadcast said that I find just very funny with Ante Zizic, who like is a very quiet guy with the media. To put it, it's not even a good or bad thing. It's just it is what it is. They were like, he's one of the most like liked guys in the team because if he just shows up and does his work, and I'm like, okay, Austin Carr. Like, I don't know if that's. That's true.
Yeah, just to jump on your AC bit. He did say when the Cavs were playing the Hornets the other day that both teams are on the precipice of being playoff teams. So
my guy also gets really hyped anytime anytime someone banks in a shot.
That's true.
Loves it.
He is Mr. Cavalier. But no, like Zizek, whatever. Didn't have like the box score warrior game he always has. He finished with 5 points, 9 rebounds, 1 offensive board, 1 steal, 1 block. But I do know that coming into the season, he was kind of the odd man out of the Baylen's rotation, and he had to more or less earn it. And you read all these inspirational hype pieces about how he's working his tail off to get back into the rotation, and then he has injury setbacks. So, you know what, just seeing him out there getting some burn and just making a positive contribution, he actually tied the team with Matthew Dellavedova for plus 15 and plus minus. So, hey, it's something, but you and I both agree that he won't be on the team next year. So good for Ante. I hope he can have a couple more positive games, taking advantage of the depleted bench. And then Dean Wade only got 6 minutes, but he had 3 points and 2 rebounds. So I guess that time in Canton's playing off. But let's talk about Brandon Knight. And Joe Varden from The Athletic had a piece out earlier in the day talking about how the Cavs are shopping John Henson and Brandon Knight. And there was a scout from a visiting team who said he wishes he could see Knight play more. And then Varden also noted, and it's something I kind of just assumed would happen with Kevin Porter out, having him play a bit of those minutes of the three, because he has at least enough of size to be plugged into the three. But 13 points and 5 assists to wrap up a game for a dude who has had a very frustrating career, I was happy for him. And I think maybe this is a good opportunity for him with Kevin Porter out and the fact that the Cavs are kind of wrecked rotation-wise and depth-wise, that maybe the Cavs can kind of drum up a little bit of trade interest for him leading up to the deadline and maybe get, like, a bad contract or, like, a couple second-round picks or something out of him. And yeah, by all accounts, like, I've talked to Brandon a few times. He's a nice guy, and you can tell, like, these injuries are frustrating for sure. And shout out to Ty Windish on the Euro step, but I've talked to him privately, and he firmly believes Brandon Knight would have was an all-star during his time with Milwaukee, and then just injuries constantly derailed him. So it's a lot like Dante Exum. I think I'm just happy to see guys who have had their careers more or less taken away from them because of injury have a solid night, and I just hope he keeps going forward in a positive direction with it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I will be curious. To my understanding, the logic of playing Deli over him, although I think Brandon Knight is like the better player at this point, and at least is going to provide kind of, I think, more consistent production. And I think it was notable that Kevin kind of notably, I could have been seeing this, we'll need to see if this holds up over the course of a couple games. I felt as if Kevin was very comfortable passing the ball over to Brandon Knight. I felt like in the natural flow of the game, that was like a real thing. What I will add in that regard is I will be curious to see if when everyone's healthy, when Windler's back, if KBJ's back, and like everything sort of settles in the next couple of weeks. And again, we're like in the home stretch here of the roster, like having to settle down. We'll see if they bring back Alphonso McKinney or Tyler Cook, or if they make a claim on someone like Gary Clark, who was released by the Rockets. Will Brandon Knight get over in over Deli at that point? I think a game like this where you like see that, he's not going to provide the same level of kind of natural ball movement, but he's a better shooter. He did have 5 assists. He isn't maybe theoretically as good of a defender, but I think Deli's kind of just a bit washed at this point. And again, they're very different players at their core DNA. Sexton tilts more towards like the Sexton model of a point guard than like Deli, who is pass and defense and shooting. He is sort of what he is. Knight's going to provide something that's more like Jordan Clarkson, but I wonder, just because he's going to raise the floor of the team a little bit, I wonder if there's just a point where, like, if they can't trade him or if they decide they need to try to increase his value over these next couple weeks, I wonder if he ends up just kind of getting more minutes by virtue of being better and them just trying to boost trade value. Because remember, if you go back to the beginning of the season, one of the themes of training camp was like them trying to boost the trade value of Brandon Knight.
It's just a shame. Like you mentioned, Kevin was looking for Brandon Knight at points because you hit the nail on the head. Exactly. Brandon Knight can hit his 3-point attempts. It's just, it's, incredible. Somebody was texting me about it during the game. And just like I said, man, Delly's just such a bummer every time I watch him take a three. And like one went in and out during the game. And I just, and I'm like, he fixed his shot mechanics and his motion and release to be a better shooter and ended up completely just derailing his actual motion. And then, like you said, he just looks washed at this point. But I don't think Dellavedova has much, if any, of a market. And I think the organization may not be so quick to move him because Beilein likes him as a safety valve option off the bench. And I think he is has those basketball intangibles where he's such a smart and intelligent player. And I've talked to him before. He told me like the big initiative for him this year is he knows that the Cavs are kind of in a rebuilding situation. And he knows that he's going to be losing a lot of playing time to these younger guards. And his priority in life, or at this point at least, is to guide these younger guys and kind of show them what he's learned from playing along players like LeBron and Giannis. And that's great, but like you said, this is kind of a golden opportunity right now because Brandon Knight, he was 3-7 from three-point range, but I feel more comfortable with him taking three-pointers at this point than Dellavedova. And even if he doesn't move the ball as well, and maybe he's not as solid of a defender as Delly, Delly still could probably be here past the trade deadline, so I'm fine if Exum's back, if Exum and Knight eat up more of Dellavedova's minutes, because once the trade deadline passes, if you're able to move Knight because you're able to take advantage of this opportunity, it's all just going to work out in the end. At least, not. I mean, it's not going to... You know, you mentioned that they might raise the team's floor. I'm not necessarily worried about the Cavs' floor being raised too much.
No, am I.
So,
But I would wonder if, like, Beilein is, or if, like, Kobe Altman is. I wonder if, like, there are some people making decisions that are, like, we want to just establish a baseline level of competency. And, like, I will say, like, when I think about it, if I were, like, designing my ideal sort of renaissance of an NBA team, I would want to, like, I would not have the guts to go full Hinkie.
No, that's the problem, though, is Philly's starting to turn the corner at this point, but you don't want to establish a culture where losing is the norm and you have, like, these soul-sucking G League dudes out there. And, I mean, I don't know, maybe there's a guy in the G League who's better than Dellavedova at this point, but...
I'm sure there are guys that are younger that are more interesting, exciting. You know, but I mean, like, the Cavs also are in a position where, like, they don't need, you know, like, young guards to play minutes. Like, if they need anything, they need Kevin Porter Jr. and Dylan Windler to be healthy more than anything else.
No, they really do. They absolutely do. And I think that's another part of the problem in itself is if this roster was fully healthy, Dante Exum would be playing back a point guard at this point because I think he's starting to show a little bit of comfort. And that if Windler and KPJ are also 100% healthy, it just completely shakes everything up. And then I think Dellavedova and Knight just wouldn't even be touching the floor at this point. And then same with Zizek and Wade. And so it's just it's a trickle down effect with all these injuries. But I don't know. I'm happy for Brandon Knight. I guess that's what I'm trying to get at with this because I just know how hard it sucks for him personally to just kind of watch his career fall apart like it has.
Yes. The two other things I will just say. Number one, Tristan Thompson got dunked on by Sekou Doumbouya in this one. He got murdered. But Tristan, I commend you for trying to play defense. I will never like clown dudes for getting dunked on while they're trying to play defense. Mm-hmm. Number two, the Derrick Rose stuff wasn't so much about like Derrick Rose like lighting up the Cavs, which he did, and that shows you like how much growth I think Sexton has to go on the defensive end in terms of being able to handle something like that. Although I thought he knew where to be, he just couldn't quite get there fast enough or make enough of an impact. To me, that was a reminder that the Cavs long term, whether it's next year in the draft, drafting somebody or, you know, John Henson this year or just something, they're going to need to figure out how to protect the rim at a better level than they are currently.
Yeah.
They need someone who really can alter shots down there, can bang a little bit. I think the draft is kind of one of the places you could look to that. You know, I don't think Henson's like a long term option. Maybe like if he ends up doesn't get any traded, doesn't take a buyout and then like wants to sign like on your mercenary deal, maybe. I think Tristan's okay at it, but you know, we don't know what his future really looks like. I think a rim protector and just finding a guy to kind of back up these guards is going to be a very important thing for the Cavs to find in the draft. And you know, you're going to get better wing defenders ideally as well, but I think this is just a game that I was like, they're really going to need to go find a rim protector of some kind. in if this version of this team is going to work in kind of the construct that it is.
No, just to jump onto your point real quick, I saw that the Cavs tweeted out that Tristan Thompson passed Roy Henson for 6th all-time in Cavaliers history with his second block tonight. I'm totally not reading this off a page right now, but like you said, credit where credit's due. That Domboya, shout out to Duncan Smith for the nickname of Dr. Doom. That Domboya dunk was absolutely filthy, but credit where credit's due. Tristan, he ain't no bitch. He tried his best to contest it, but that's just been a problem for the Cavs for quite a while now. It's just rim protection has never really been a priority, and I think the draft is a good opportunity to take a look at that and then just kind of see what they have going forward at this point. And then obviously wing defenders are important, but the Cavs are just kind of in that weird transition where they're still trying to shed these final pieces from that championship team. And I mean, at this point, it's Thompson, Love, and then Dellavedova by trade, by coming back to Cleveland. And it's just, yeah, no, that's something that the Cavs definitely need to prioritize going forward. And like, I know people like to poo-poo the defensive stats, and I'm also one of those people. And like I said over the summer, like, oh, J.B. Bickerstaff and the Grizzlies had a really good defense last year. But I think the Cavs have the right ideas for a defensive, for at least competent defense, but they just don't have the personnel. And a lot of it's the fact that they have a rookie point guard who is undersized, a sophomore point guard who is undersized, and who is playing shooting guard. And then you have Jetty, who statistically isn't an outstanding defender to begin with. And then Kevin Love isn't great either. And Tristan is solid enough, but there in itself is the problem. And then also these injuries do have a bit of a factor in that as well, but it's okay. It's a team in their Renaissance era, and they're learning how to grow together, and hopefully they can figure it out over the summer. So that's just something to talk about in the future though.
Yeah, I think that is I think a very good read. I think defensive stats can be a little noisier than the offensive ones, but they're worth learning as well. One other thing I say before we go, the Cavs again did struggle turning the ball over. One of the reasons I think Detroit did come back and win this game, the Cavs had a turnover percentage of 17.7%, the Pistons 9.4%.
Jeez Louise.
Pistons in the 91st percentile, that's good. Cavs in the 21st percentile. That's bad. The Pistons scored 26 points off Cavs turnovers. That's just something that's going to have to change going forward. Okay, one last break, and then we're going to come back to talk about Kevin Love, because we need to talk about him a little bit more, because he did say something notable on Thursday. So stay tuned for more Locked On Cavs. Okay, guys, let's get into Kevin Love. Kevin Love said something interesting on Thursday. He spoke at Shootaround. He spoke, I think he was correctly asked about his on-court behavior, some of the things going on with him. There's a bunch of articles you can read from different players. Here's a quote from Kevin Love's Shooter, kind of the most notable thing about what was going on. He also had a quote to Cleveland.com it was private, okay. But Love told Cleveland.com, quote, "No matter how good or bad things are, balance is the hardest thing to get in life. I know that is philosophical, but it's true. It's just like Kobe said to me the other night, you're the best player on an NBA team, and don't ever forget that. And he's right. Sometimes you have to get checked and put it in perspective. I know now, opposed to when I was 24, 25, I'm able to either take that on the chin or absorb that. I'd look myself in the mirror and say, hey, listen, that's unacceptable. You need to be better and move on." Again, share that in a private moment with Chris Fedor. We're going to have to just hear what he said to the rest of the media in a not-so-private moment at Shootaround, quote-unquote clearing the air, as it's kind of been framed.
Kevin, you displayed some frustration over the past few games. What's the root of your frustration?
I think from a human standpoint, I was frustrated and let my emotions get the best of me in, before the new year. It was actually on New Year's Eve in Toronto. We were down, 15, 17 points heading into the half, and carried over into the second half where, I wasn't acting like a 31-year-old. I was acting like a 13-year-old. So,
Evan, with everything Kevin said on Tuesday, and then he comes out and plays like he did, Beeline, kind of comes out and takes some of the blame. There's been kind of pushing back against sort of how it's been framed. It is what it is. What do you just make of where this is now at, now that Kevin is kind of it's kind of acting like the adult in the room to some degree again.
Well, I was in a shoot around this morning and I did see the quote in tweet context from Angel Gray, and I raised my eyebrow and said, wow, that feels like a forced quote. And then I waited and saw the video of the actual feed and everything. And no, I 100% think he was genuine. I think Kevin has matured a lot, and I think in the Kelsey Russo's piece covering it, she quoted him saying, like, listen, he's like, he knows he's an asshole, but he's not that big of an asshole is what he's more or less getting at. And I think that's actually what he said. I think, yeah, he's being a bit of the adult in the room, and I just know he is kind of aware of the situation as a whole, and like that quote-unquote private moment that Chris Fedor ended up sharing with everyone, it's true. He's the best player on this team.
Hang out with my close friends, the beat reporters.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not trying to be like a prick here. I'm just saying, like, when players do that, they're trying to use their connections in the media for a purpose. That's just how this works. I will stop being a prick now.
No, dude, I totally agree. It's fine. I think a lot of it's showing the maturity, and maybe he just kind of knows what it's like to play in a winning situation, because when he came to Cleveland the first time around, he put up a lot of empty calories, in my opinion, because he put up these insane stat lines, but Minnesota was never good. And then he kind of had to learn how to play third fiddle. He had to mature a lot playing along LeBron and Kyrie and then those championship squads and everything. And he was kind of in the crosshairs all the time as the main target for the media and everyone pointing the finger in terms of blame. It's just like, I think it was whoever does the mean tweets bit for late night. They said, well, so-and-so lost again, better blame Kevin Love. Like, that was just the running joke for a while. And I think that thickened his skin a lot, and him kind of finding his way with mental health advocacy and everything and figuring out, like, this is his life's mission outside off the court, that helps a lot put things in perspective as well. And like you said, he's just more so being the adult in the room tonight. And, I mean, just a quick shout-out to Cavs Twitter, because I do know he dropped a line saying, 5 weeks or 5 months, I don't know how much longer I'm going to be here. And
Cavs Twitter incredible.
Ran with it. And I'm going to pump the brakes a little bit, because I don't know if he means that he knows he's getting moved or not. Let's just not. I mean, we can speculate on it all we want, but I think it's just showing a lot of that maturity and growth that he's kind of obtained from his time here, and the fact that his time here could be limited and he needs to make the most of the opportunity and not be a 13-year-old instead of a 31-year-old, which is another thing he said, and just kind of help guide and help these younger players mature and grow. So, and I think we saw a lot of that tonight too, because he, like you said, he was, where we talked about it from the opening, he was locked in for the entire game, and it just was really nice to see and engage Kevin Love again instead of him just kind of mentally checking out and then having bad body language in the locker room and off the court. So I'm all for it. And if he's only here for 5 weeks or 5 months, either or, I'm happy that he's just kind of back and looking at things as a glass half full kind of perspective instead.
Yeah, I think that's the right way to look at it. I will also just say, like, I think like Kevin, like, doing this and like acting like this is like what you want from the situation. Like, I think when you think about what he is and like where he is and how much money he's making and everything, like, just you're getting paid. Like, the Cavs are certainly not going to be blameless in this as well. Like, I'm not trying to say like this is like the Cavs need to be utmost respect at all times. Like, I'm sure there is some disconnect from in the way Kevin feels like he was pitched on signing the contract and everything. Like, I do think there's more there, that there's meat in there that we don't know yet. There's like stuff that's going to come out if and when he gets traded. I would also just say, like, I think when you sign that contract, I've said this before, Kevin is a smart guy. He had to know that was a possibility. Mm-hmm. If you wanted the most amount of flexibility, like, he, in signing this contract, even if the Cavs approached him with it, he had a lot of leverage, I think, on them to be like, okay, I'll just take a 1-1. Like, he chose the security, and I 100% get it. I would certainly, I think, do the same thing. Players more often than not do the same thing, unless they're like LeBron, Kawhi, whomever.
Yeah.
Like, those are the only guys that really kind of do that kind of stuff. He could have done that, but he signed that deal and he had to know that something like this was a possibility. Mm-hmm. And it's not good. I don't think it's like good for him or anyone for like that to be toxic. So I'm glad that this is being walked back. So even if like even if like there is still going to be some discomfort and whatnot, I'm glad that we're at least this is getting pushed back just a little bit.
No, I agree too. And just to touch on your point about the extension, I do believe that he approached the team asking for the extension. I think The Athletic first reported that. And but I do believe the mentality, because based on Channing's tweets about talking about how they thought they were a playoff team last year, and then how just some of the people I've spoke to that are former Cavaliers at this point, they had that mentality as well. But no one foresaw Kevin breaking his foot in the preseason and then missing, being out till past mid-February. And then that just kind of derailed everything. And then all the assets and those veterans that were put around Kevin, along with Colin Sexton and Jetty Osmond, were those two obviously weren't traded, but like a lot of George Hill, Kyle Korver, a lot of those veterans were just getting moved out. And it just, I understand his frustration, but like you said, I think you have to be realistic that I know that the Cavs themselves at least publicly believe they could have made the playoffs last year. At least that's their touting at first at the beginning, maybe even over the summer soon after LeBron had left town. And it's just a little flat. I raised an eyebrow and I said, okay, I'll bite. And then it just all fell apart at once. And I think that's something that Kevin obviously knew, because like you said, he's a smart guy and he's pretty cerebral and aware of the situation. But like you said, I agree. I'm glad they're just kind of walking it back and just kind of keeping things together, at least externally, so that people aren't recklessly speculating and just kind of feeding into the toxicity. Because it could, if the public opinion is damning the young guys or Kevin Love or John Beilein or Kobe Altman or anybody, they're going to have negative repercussions on how this renaissance is going to go forward. So I'm glad that things are hopefully watered under the bridge. I'd like it to stay this way, but we'll see what happens. And yeah, the trade deadline is not too far away, so I still firmly believe Kevin's getting moved by then. So
yeah, I would agree with that. Any final thoughts, Evan, as we get out of here?
No, not really. We're about to get the taste of West Coast Cavs pretty soon, but a quick stop in Detroit, and then you and I will be either staying up late or watching the Cavs get blown out by three very good teams after that. But, no, should be a fun little romp just to, you know, see the Cavs change of pace and get a change of scenery, but it's going to be a good test for them going forward, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I'm hopeful just selfishly that Kevin does come back, and this wasn't like theoretically, like hope they don't trade him on the break like they could, but I hope that like there is one more. That would sort of be nice if you could get one more with him back at the queue, but we'll see what goes on. Again, we're going to be doing some mailbags, going to be trying to book some fun guests in the next week or so, kind of working some of that out, but you can tweet us at Locked On Cavs to submit your questions, LockedOnCavs@gmail.com, Evan's DMs, the Google voice box number in our Twitter bio. You can send them there. We'll get them. We're going to do a hopefully one mailbag. If you get a bunch of good questions, Evan's already gotten a bunch. We can do a couple of them, especially while the Cavs are playing out West next week. And then we'll kind of get back to normal once they get back. But for myself, for Evan, it's been Locked On Cavs for Wednesday, January 8th. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.